In Washington State prisons, 85% of the faith-based ministries for inmates are Christian. That's typical in the United States. In fact, if an inmate wants to be involved in anything that is not daily prison life, often their only option is Christian faith-based ministry. Professor Tanya Erzin wanted to know how that came to be and how it's affecting people. She teaches religion and gender studies at the University of Puget Sound. She told me that the rise in Christian ministries is happening in part because public spending on prisons has dropped.
What has stepped in to fill that gap are primarily religious organizations, and they're primarily conservative. But prisons have been religious from the very beginning. The first prisons in Pennsylvania and New York were penitentiaries. They were created by Quakers and Methodists. If you think about that term, penitentiary, to be penitent, they were started by Quakers who believed that they'd put people in individual cells. You would find the inner light within you and that you would be transformed through a relationship with God.
So today's Christian-based programs in a prison, what kind of programs are those typically?
They really vary. So there are major prison ministry organizations. The biggest, one of the biggest, is called Prison Fellowship Ministry, and it was run by and started by Chuck Colson, who went to prison for Watergate-related crimes.
Right.
And became born again. And so he started this organization that operated throughout the country, but took over entire wings of prisons. And every prison has a chaplain, and chaplains just historically tend to be Christian, so they can really determine who comes in. So if a chaplain happens to be Southern Baptist in Central Florida, you know, the majority of religious volunteers coming in are going to probably be from that religious background.
And these are not just Bible study programs. This is education assistance and counseling, right? Give us an idea what services these are.
If you think about religious groups come in, they do trauma counseling, they do mental health counseling, they do high school GED, they do college programs, they do things like anger management, but with an evangelical framework. And some of the programs I looked at in the South particularly are the Baptist seminaries have offered the only college degree programs in prisons. So the option is if you want to go to school, you get a degree in Christian ministry, and they then take men and women from those prisons and move them to another prison in the state. So in Texas and Louisiana, there's no shortage of prisons. And the idea is to have them proselytize to other prisoners. They call it moral rehabilitation because they have to avoid the idea that they are proselytizing.
Does an inmate have to say they're Christian to take advantage of this range of programs?
No. Legally, they can't, because that's violating, you know, the First Amendment. But there are very, very few non-Christians in those programs. So when I interviewed people, there were a small handful of Muslims, but most people identify as Christian. Because if you think about it, the bulk of the classes are around, you know, how do you reach someone's heart who's not a Christian, you know, looking specifically an entire class on the book of, you know, studying Jeremiah in the Bible. So, you know, you really have to be motivated to want to get an education if you're not part of that religious tradition.
You mentioned you talked with Muslim inmates. Mm-hmm. What do non-Christian inmates tell you about all of this?
Well, one particularly I talk a lot about in my book, he was in this program in Texas. And he was one of, I think, the only person in his class who was Muslim. And he just said, you know, this is my only, I am a Muslim. They're not going to convert me, but this is the only opportunity I have. And he was so shocked that they let him talk to me. We were in a room with no one else around. You know, obviously there are guards walking around. But he kept saying, "Are you a church lady?" "No." "Are you a police officer?" "No." I mean, it took a long time for him to just open up. And then he kept laughing. He kept saying, I'm never allowed to talk about this. He talked about how frustrating it is to feel like you're trying to learn, but there are always people who are not undermining, but challenging your particular beliefs. So, and then in Florida, the Muslim group would meet. They had this giant chapel. It's Central Florida. It's the only air-conditioned building in the entire prison, and you can imagine what it's like there. They sleep in these big open dormitories. This evangelical megachurch had redone the chapel. There was, a huge TV screen. There were musical instruments. There was air conditioning. And then the Muslim group was allowed to meet, and it essentially was a glorified broom closet. And the warden at the time said to me, I was just visiting, what do you think? I'm thinking of eliminating recreation time, so time that people can go outside, and requiring people to be in the chapel. There's all of these levels of coercion that happen in prison. And I think when you have limited choices, and those are the only choices presented to you, that's what you're going to take advantage of.
What does all this look like here in Washington State prisons?
Washington's interesting for a lot of reasons. They have a lot of faith-based groups, but they're, especially in the women's prison, are really shifting to want professional groups who can do things like addiction and mental health and counseling that aren't coming from a faith-based orientation. One thing I'm really interested in is just how these programs affect women, and I work with women here in Washington. I do a college program. Statistically, I think 93% of women in prison have reported domestic violence, sexual abuse, or violence as a child. And so there's this astronomical amount of women who have some kind of trauma, you know, coupled with whatever got them there. There's a lot of addiction, and there just are not the mental health and other programs to help them. And so still you have religious groups coming in to try and work on things like trauma or dealing with rape or dealing with abuse. And while I think those services are necessary, a lot of them end up being about, well, you know, surrender your problems to Jesus. If you submit to God, if you submit your problems to God, that's how you will get better. And I think that's, I think there should be other kinds of services and ways in thinking about how to deal with that problem.
We're talking with Professor Tanya Erzin, Associate Professor of Religion, Gender Studies at University of Puget Sound, and we're talking about the predominance of Christian prison ministries in our public prisons. Have we missed talking about the positives of these groups?
Yeah, I think there are, or they wouldn't continue to exist. And someone once posed the question to me, are these ministries just another form of discipline and punishment, or do they provide a lifeline for dignity and transformation for people inside? And I think it's both. I think they do both. I think what they enable for a lot of people is it gives them a sense of belonging and community in prison. Those people I talked about who are serving life, after a while, you have no family visit you. You don't have anybody on the outside. Your whole world is a prison. So if you're part of a faith-based group, you get to meet people coming in who are free people. You develop those relationships, which I think is really important. And I think the prison system is really designed to dehumanize people. So you're called offender or inmate, you know, inmate Radke, instead of your first name or referred to as a person. And in a faith-based group, I think there is a humanizing process that happens because a lot of people feel that they are, especially if they're Christian believers, they feel that they have a personal relationship with God, that God cares about their life, that they're forgiven, that they can be redeemed. And that is a real shift from a model that says, you're a horrible person, you committed a crime, you're going to prison for the rest of your life. We forget it, you're incorrigible, as opposed to, we believe that you can be different and that you can be transformed. My criticism is that with so many religious groups and so many prisons who have day-to-day contact with people in prison, and probably know more about people in prison than anyone except people's families, they're the ones who could say, why in Louisiana do so many people get life without parole? Why is this considered a normal sentence? Why are we sending more women to prison than we've ever sent before? Why are we sending a woman with 5 small children to prison for a nonviolent offense as opposed to another kind of intervention? They have the constituency, they have a mouthpiece to really make, you know, say things broader about changing sentencing and changing the policies and politics around this. But so many of them are focused on individual conversion and not on the broader picture about why is the prison there in the first place and why are there so many people in it. So I think I'm hopeful that religious groups can start to ask those bigger questions.
Finally, Tanya, most people listening to you right now haven't been in prison. Many don't know anybody in prison. Why is this an issue we, the rest of us, should all be thinking about?
Sure. Because the United States is truly exceptional in that we incarcerate more people in proportion to our population than anywhere else in the world. And it's continuing to skyrocket. Here in Washington, just if you're listening, the women's prison is way overcrowded. Women are the fastest growing part of the prison population. And I actually think a lot of people do know and are directly impacted by this, because eventually most people get released from prison. They rejoin community. They have to have a job. They have to have housing. And the question I have for people, do you want to have a system in which we're trying to help people to figure out how to transform and change their lives so that when they get out, they can be a full citizen? Or do you want to just warehouse people, astronomical numbers of people who then get out and have mental health problems, lack of education, whose families don't have the resources to succeed? Because I think that harms all of us as a society. And I think it's a ethical and political issue. We have to find a better solution to how we think about punishment.
Associate Professor Tanya Erzin, Religion and Gender Studies at University of Puget Sound. She also heads the Freedom Education Project Puget Sound. It's a college program in the Washington Corrections Center for Women. Her book is called God in Captivity, The Rise of Faith-Based Ministries in an Age of Mass Incarceration, and it comes out early next month. Tanya Erzin is also giving free talks around the state about this as part of the Humanities Washington Speakers Bureau, and we're tweeting out a link with more information now at KUOW.